again. We're coming to you from the trenches. I'm Rita Sand.
And I'm Tina Hernandez-Laschetti.
Today, Tina and I will take you to some of the anti-war demonstrations that took place a little over a week ago in Chicago, commemorating the two-year anniversary of the official U.S. attack on Iraq.
We'll take you to a prayer vigil organized by the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights.
And we'll hear about the semi-finalists in the contest to win a contract for the electronic voting machines coming to your polling place by spring 2006. For Indy Media headlines and news from Chicago and around the world, visit our internet address at www.chicago.indymedia.org. We're coming to you from the trenches. As early as 6 a.m. on Saturday, March 19th, anti-war demonstrators took to the streets in several feeder marches, stopping to protest at key locations like this Army Recruiting Center on North Clyburn, on their way to a 2 o'clock rally at Federal Plaza.
So here we are outside the Military Recruitment Center right near Cabrini-Green Housing Project. The octopus has its tentacles reached even into the ghettos of this country. This is where they get people to sign up. This is where you sign on the dotted line. This is where you sign your life away for the U.S. Empire.
The speaker was interrupted by a voice alarm from a car parked in front of the recruiting center that chanted, "I've been tampered with, I've been tampered with."
And we could say the same things about our neighborhoods and our communities with these military recruiters coming in tampering with our lives. These people set up shop in the ghettos and barrios all over this country. And they try to tell these young people that their lot lies with the rulers of this empire. They try to tell people that it makes sense for them and that it's honorable in some way for them to go and kill people around the world who are just like them. No. This is not what we're fighting for. This is not the future concentrated in this day, March 19, 2005. This is a day when we celebrate the resistance of people all over the world to what this empire is trying to do. This is a day when we confront these war makers and we can confront these empire builders right on their own turf and all over the world. Right now, people all over this planet are rising up in protest against what this government's doing.
What does democracy look like?
As this group of about two dozen demonstrators walked down Orleans carrying signs and a coffin, drivers honked in agreement, while six Chicago police officers followed on bikes and drew near occasionally, trying to hand demonstrators orders to disperse.
At 11:30 a.m., Michigan and Chicago, six white buses, six paddy wagons, and about 50 police occupied the intersection, bringing mixed feelings amongst bystanders.
Do you know what's happening today?
Well, we've heard about it. We're actually from Minneapolis. We're here visiting for the weekend. We heard there's going to be a some kind of demonstration, so we're just kind of seeing what's going on. We don't know too much about it.
Okay. What do you think of the police presence in the area?
I think it's good that the police are here to keep things under control.
I think the police presence is good. It's kind of an odd cause to be out here demonstrating for.
What is your take on the U.S. presence in Iraq?
It's good. These people demonstrating here, Iraqis have never been able to do this. So now they have the chance, thanks to American presence in Iraq.
I think it's a difficult position we're in right now because we're there, we made the decision to be there. But once again, as I say, I hate to see there are over 1,500 deaths of soldiers that are there. But sometimes, like anywhere, that's a price you pay to have the freedom we have in this country. Right or wrong, I think it's something we just live with.
I have a brother who's currently serving in the military in Iraq. And I just pray he comes home safe. That's all.
It's different when it's personal.
Right.
I mean, everybody can stand here and make the decision, but I think it affects you personally. It has a whole different light.
I mean, I know we had to fight for what happened to us on September 11th, but at what cost? You just have to wonder, at what cost? You know, he didn't find what he said was there, so he should have pulled them out. They don't belong there. They need to come home. I hope they all come home safely.
What do you think of the protesters who are here today?
I think we all have freedom of speech. It's one of our, you know, one of the amendments, and it's one of our rights, and we should be allowed to say what we think and what we feel. And unfortunately, some people take that right to extremes, and I think that that's why the police need to be here. So I just hope that it ends peacefully and that no one gets hurt in the process of saying what you believe.
I think every American, every person here in America has a right to protest. That's what we're fighting for in Iraq, basically to give those people the same, I would say, civil and human rights that should be available to any person. So I don't think the protesters should be penalized for exercising those rights.
As I spoke with these bystanders, protesters across the street called out the names of American soldiers and Iraqis who have died since the March 2003 invasion.
Majid Tahir Mashiouen, 50 years of age, died by an American missile attack.
Fox Travis A, confirmed dead, 11-03-04.
Makaya Ekabi Alabanese, 60 years of age, she died by a shrapnel.
Lynch Matthew D, 10-31-04, confirmed dead.
Arwa Trik Kisser, 10 years of age, she died by a shrapnel.
Bao Jeremy D, 10-30-04, confirmed dead.
Marwan Hussain, 14 years of age, he died by an American missile attack.
Scarborough Michael P, 10-30-04, confirmed dead.
Marwan Hussain Matna Albani, 17 years of age. He died by an American Liberty missile.
At Oak and Michigan Avenue, leaders of the March 19th coalition attempted to proceed with plans to hold a press conference and to march down Michigan Avenue, despite the court rulings in the city of Chicago's favor to stop them. Chris Giovannis of the March 19th coalition explained the situation to the crowd and to the corporate media that gathered at the corner.
So, we're waiting here for a couple of Reverend Jake, Reverend Kim, some other people who are going to hold a press conference here, a press conference that the police told Alderman Joe Moore on Friday we were not allowed to have. After that, there will be an effort to negotiate with the police to exercise our constitutional rights by walking peacefully down Michigan Avenue on the sidewalk if necessary, get out information to our fellow residents about the real cost of the war. There are a number of people in this crowd with flyers. They are double-sided flyers. They advise people on one side that our constitutional rights have been canceled here. They advise people on the other side what the real cost of the war are. Over $2.1 billion to Chicago residents alone. Take these flyers. Take as many of them as you can. If we are given an order to disperse by the police, people need to use their best judgment. Obviously, you know, we don't want people to go to jail. We're peaceful, nonviolent people. Take these flyers and hand them out as you make your way to the legal permitted rally at the Federal Plaza at Adams and Dearborn at 2 p.m. Now, it is our hope that police will at least give us the courtesy of pretending that we don't live in a jackboot state by allowing us to hand out these flyers, and it is not illegal for you to do that. In order to be in compliance with the ordinance, you cannot obstruct foot traffic. You cannot obstruct pedestrian traffic. And our lawyers tell us that if you travel in groups of more than 20, the police could use that as a pretext to arrest you. So in fact, it's probably better to travel in twos and threes and fours and fives. Take your time. Have a good time. It's a beautiful day. Talk to people. Stop in coffee shops. Pin up these flyers. Get the message out. We wanted to be here legally because this is where the people are. And while we're very grateful to our friends in the corporate media who are here today, we know that we can't count on them to really do what we think is a fair job of getting our message out there. So, everybody who's got these flyers for distribution for other people to take, hold them up. Flyer people, where are the flyers?
Jim Fenerty of the National Lawyers Guild observed from across the street.
My name is Jim Fenerty from the National Lawyers Guild. And I'm here today as a legal observer for the National Lawyers Guild. We have many legal observers out here, both law students and lawyers. What I'm concerned about here, there are people gathering here on Oak and Michigan. And I had talked to a deputy chief on Thursday, and I asked them that my people, the Lawyers Guild observers, not get arrested. They're here just to observe. I just ran into the lawyer for the police department, Sherry Mecklenburg, who told me, I told him he can't do that. And she said, you're going to get arrested too, being a legal observer. So, I mean, they're hell-bent on making arrests here. Looks like they're going to surround people now. And any minute, looks like they're going to, there they go, see? Looks like they're going to start arresting people. So I got to keep my eyes on this. I'm over here so I can get a better view of what the police do, because we want to document and see what happens. They're taking out, look, they got their cuffs on, plastic cuffs. That means the dog that's over there probably going to get two sets of cuffs.
Yeah.
But there's some babies over there, or there's a lady with a baby carriage.
Thank you.
It is our honor and responsibility to protect your right to demonstrate.
The Chicago Police Department gave orders to disperse and told protesters that they should go to Bughouse Square, then march down Clark Street. Yet, the protesters did not hold a permit for any of these sites either.
My name is Bill Massey. I'm from the Answer Coalition. I am here as a veteran of the Korean War. I've also been in the civil rights movement and did jail time with Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. I find that the city's actions are completely outrageous and against anything that is constitutionally right. There is no legal right for the city to not allow us to demonstrate. The Constitution allows the right of free speech and free assembly. It also allows the right of a free press. We have been threatened with arrest if we hold this news conference. We are holding it. We will stand up for our rights. If it means going to jail, we will go to jail, but we will be back out and on the street, and we will continue this struggle until we win. Thank you. We have seen in past unjust wars, that when the authorities see the tide turning against them, that they respond with attacks on civil liberties, and that is precisely what we are seeing here today. The city of Chicago is clamping down on free speech because people are turning against this war.
After two warnings, the police moved in as Andy Thayer of the March 19th Coalition began to speak.
Police are surrounding the people in the press conference.
Thayer was arrested, as were two others who were trying to disperse down Michigan Avenue. Protesters were surrounded and only allowed to walk west on Oak.
Dear God, we come at this time asking, Lord, that you be with us, strengthen us, give us courage.
Reverend Paul Jakes, who was also part of the news conference, took over the megaphone with a calming voice as police pushed the crowd down Oak Street.
And so we ask that all of you will take hands as we pray, as we do the prayer of dispersal. Let us all take hands as we do the prayer of dispersal.
Amen.
Let us pray. Dear God, during this Lenten season, we ask, God, that you be with us, that you guide us, that when we meet today at 2 at the Federal Plaza, that you will give us justice, that you will give us a voice that cries in the wilderness to let our people be saved that are in Iraq, our young men that are dying and need justice.
Amen.
And we need your help now.
Amen.
We ask that you change the mind of President Bush and those that are in council. Please, that this is your love. I ain't going to nobody. Turn me around, I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching up the freedom lane.
Then a bottleneck occurred. When protesters arrived at Bughouse Square, the entrance was blocked by a row of police on horses and another row of police holding batons. Everyone was supposed to go around the back of the park and enter through one small area. Protesters then just stayed in the street, blocking Dearborn and Walton.
At Walton and Dearborn, over 1,000 people gathered coming from six-feeder marches throughout the city. Palestinian Solidarity Group, Youth and Student Feeder March, Southsiders for Peace, Gay Liberation Network, Christian Peacemakers, and the Northsiders for Peace. Negotiations were underway, marchers wanting to walk south on State to Federal Plaza, whereas law enforcement agreed to walking south on Dearborn.
We are turning to you, people here today, to make a decision. This is the best we can do. The police have said they will not give us State Street.
No!
Disagreement arose amidst the marchers, where people wanted to walk on State, others down Dearborn. The gathering began to thin as people began to leave, and about half began walking down Dearborn, already heading towards Federal Plaza, without the negotiations settled. Marchers who stayed began chanting, "Don't sell us out," and "Shame," towards those leaving. Half the group walked back, where some met the remaining marchers with hostility. It was agreed upon to finally walk down Dearborn towards Federal Plaza, where there would be several thousands of people gathered. An overflow of people who could not fit onto the plaza remained on Dearborn Street, where they were ordered back onto the plaza by the police, on horses, despite that there was no more room. People linked arms and were pushed back while chanting, "We're not cows," and "I'm not a cow, stop this stupid corral."
The plaza attracted only about 24 counter-protesters who were unable to spoil the festive atmosphere on this cold and windy day as the crowds cheered on the many speakers, including Hatem Abu Deya, director of the Arab American Action Network, police brutality watchdog Reverend Paul Jakes, and Maria Sagado of the Save Send Coalition. The highlight of the rally was the appearance of Cynthia McKinney, congresswoman from Atlanta, Georgia.
2 years ago, we gathered all across America to say no to war. We were joined by people all over the planet who know that there is an alternative to war. But war is about the only option available when the real motive is to steal natural resources that belong to somebody else. Or to restack the deck in the Middle East with today's generation of coups and assassinations, following the likes of the U.S. 1949 ouster of Syria's elected government, the U.S. 1953 ouster of Iran's elected government, the U.S. 1958 landing of Marines in Lebanon, and its 1963 support for a coup in Iraq after an assassination attempt against its leader failed. The militarism we see today is nothing new. Even though some 14 countries have withdrawn their troops since March 2003, Bush tells the American people that he has no idea when the U.S. troops can expect to come home. Sadly, many of them are being forced to take matters into their own hands, with filings for conscientious objector status, forced pregnancies, disappearances, seeking asylum in Canada, and leading rallies like this one today all over America. The American people and our children over there fighting still haven't been told the real reason the United States is at war with the Iraqi people. And against the people, the U.S. war machine has turned. Thousands of Iraqis, especially children, have been killed by our sanctions and our bombs. This is an immoral and an illegal war, and we need to bring our troops home now. But instead, they lay the groundwork to expand the war and destabilize Iran, Lebanon, and Syria. Destroying Iraq isn't good enough for them. Now, nor are the million men and women in our armed services enough for them. The George Bush war machine wants you too, and they want your children. Everywhere you turn, the Pentagon is denying it wants to reinstate the draft, but at the same time, it laments that recruitment is way down. So they've turned to mercenaries, and they will increasingly be used to fight their war with your tax dollars. While reinstating the draft only feeds the war machine, in fact, we need to get military recruiters out of our high schools. They need to stop harassing our children, and the $1 billion that they spend on slick radio and TV ads and friendly and unfriendly neighborhood recruitment or offices ought to be put in the education budget so our children can go to college without going to war first. They tell us this is a war for democracy, but that's a joke, because George Bush came to power by stopping democracy at home, denying the opportunity to vote to blacks and Latinos in Florida. They built on that fine record last year with hackable voting machines that don't accurately tally our votes. And in countries like Haiti, where democracy was thriving, they arrested President Aristide and forced him at gunpoint to leave his own country. While they purport to cherish democracy, they really have a disdain for it. Democracy in Venezuela, India, Spain, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay has produced proud people willing to stand up to U.S. imperialism, coup attempts, and destabilization of their countries. And the good news is that resistance is spreading. The worse they are, the stronger we become. And worse they will become because they now also aim their sights at China and at Russia after they've finished balkanizing the Middle East. But one thing I guarantee to you and to them is that we won't be fooled. We know the truth, and we won't be stopped. So stay strong, my brothers and sisters, because we got a lot of work to do. Thank you.
That was Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney speaking in Federal Plaza at the anti-war rally on March 19th. Chicago's demonstrations numbered among over 800 that took place throughout the country, as well as many others that took place around the world, including on the streets of London, Tokyo, Istanbul, Copenhagen, Bombay, Lahore, Rome, Ankara, Athens, Brasilia, and Glasgow. You can find video, audio, pictures, and stories of the day's protests at chicago.indymedia.org. Coming up, e-voting is on its way to Illinois. We're coming to you from the trenches. According to the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, all punch card ballot systems are to be replaced with electronic voting machines by 2006. The Chicago Board of Elections and the Cook County Board of Elections solicited proposals for replacing voting machines in this area and narrowed the field to four companies. Recently, some members of the public were able to attend a demonstration of the four voting machines proposed. Ted Sawinski of the Oak Park Coalition for Truth and Justice heard about the event through the grapevine and went to do his own evaluation.
This is downtown at the, and I work downtown, so it was convenient for me to go there at lunchtime. And what it was a demo of four vendors that the city and county jointly asked to do a demo of their hardware so interested people can take a look at it and evaluate it.
Did it look like it was open to the public?
It did, and it didn't appear to be invitation only, but it wasn't very publicized. And I didn't know about it until somebody called me about it. And I've been trying to follow these issues closely, too.
According to the Chicago Board of Elections, Tom Leach, he said that these were the four finalists, so there must have been semi-finalists as well.
Right. They handed out some literature. When you went there, you got several pieces of paper. Two papers summarizing what it was all about, and then a third form for you to fill out for an evaluation. Okay, and so one of those papers said that there originally was a field of 10 candidates. They created a RFP, and they got 10 responses, and they whittled it down to four. And those four vendors were Diebold, Sequoia, ES&S, and Hertz InterCivic. So I went there Tuesday the 15th, and I was there for almost 2 hours talking to the vendors and looking at the machines and trying them out. And they're all pretty much the same. three of them were touchscreen machines, and the fourth one, Hart InterCivic, was, it wasn't touchscreen, but you had a dial that you turned to select the candidate, and then you pushed a button to select it. And which was kind of an advantage, because I remember reading reports of actual machines in elections where you go to select, say, Kerry, but the Bush thing lights up instead. So it was out of, they claim that it was out of alignment, and so that kind of system would get around the alignment problem. The other three machines were touchscreen machines, and some were easier reading than others, but they're all pretty much the same. All four of the machines had, and this is a requirement required by both the Cook County and the city, they had a paper printout of the ballot, and which is also required by Illinois law right now. So that's what we came to look at. Four vendors, touchscreen machines, basically electronic touchscreen machines with paper printed ballot that the voter can verify. Usually this paper ballot was under a piece of plastic or glass, so they couldn't touch it or change it or do anything to it, but you can view it, and then it would roll up into a roll inside the machine, so you couldn't tamper with it.
I see. Did that make you feel better about all the machines?
Security-wise, it was hard to tell how secure they were, because you know, it was just a black box. You pushed the buttons, it recorded your vote, and it printed the results on a paper ballot, and a slick salesman was telling you how secure it was. But you had no way of judging whether it was actually secure or not, because you don't know what's going on inside the machine. You don't know what the software is doing. The fact that it has a paper ballot printout makes you feel a little better, though, because without that, you would have no idea how your vote is actually being recorded. So that's why Illinois requires it now. And I was just online a little while ago. There's a website called electionline.org, and they have one page that lists all the legislation that's been passed and is pending in all states in the country. And almost every single state has a bill passed or legislation pending requiring paper ballots as a voter-verified paper ballot that would be used in a recount. Okay, so if there's any question about the election, they can go back and count the votes on the paper ballots.
Now, with these electronic voting machines, how would the votes be tabulated? How would they get from the machines to the election office where they are tabulated?
Right. Well, every vendor has a different system. Diebold and Hart InterCivic have their own system of transmitting the votes from the individual voting machines to a central tabulator, either in the precinct or at another location. Usually, in the precinct, the voting machines are either networked on a secure private network, or they're connected by a cable, or you're either there, you carry an ATM card that contains the votes from the machine where you voted into a tabulating machine in the precinct. And then once all the votes get into that tabulating machine, the votes get translated from that precinct to some central location. Diebold, I know, has been criticized in the past because their tabulating software ran on Windows. The votes were stored in MS Access, which is notoriously insecure, and there were stories about people hacking in and modifying votes just in a matter of seconds. Okay. So they said, I talked to the vendor, he said that they upgraded it to Sybase, which is more of a real database, and he claimed that CompuWare tried to hack into their system and he couldn't do it, but I couldn't verify that. It could be a weak point, because here you have a public election in a public place, so people are watching to see what's going on, and then the votes get transmitted to another location that's being administered not in a public way anyway, and you don't know what happens behind those closed doors. You just have to trust them, I guess.
Would this have to be done by a technician from the company, or is this something that the election officials could do themselves?
It's something the election officials we train to do with their system. Now, as I said, two of the systems had their proprietary tabulating systems, okay? And then two of the other vendors, Sequoia and ESNS, have adapters so you can take the ATM card, whatever it is, from the electronic voting machine and plug it into the same machine that's used to read the punch cards. Okay, so it'll be accumulated in the same machine and then transmitted to the existing tabulating system that Cook County and the City of Chicago uses right now. So that's a huge advantage for those vendors. And ESNS is the current vendor of all the machines used by Cook County and Chicago now, the punch card machines, as well as machine, like when you vote, as you know, when you're done punching out, voting on a punch card, you take that card and you insert it into this machine, which tabulates the vote. Okay, it counts the votes. That machine is also produced by ESNS. And so that machine transmits the vote at the end of election night to the central office where it's counted on the central tabulating machines, or I'm not sure how that works. But so that part would stay the same, at least, if they went with these two vendors, Sequoia or ESNS. And that's, I think that's a pretty big advantage. Plus, it's probably, voters can probably be more comfortable with that because it's using a system that's already been in use for many years. And elections in Illinois have never been very different from the exit polls. Okay, just like I know for 2004, the difference between the exit poll in Illinois and the vote counts were statistically negligible. They're almost the same, as opposed to states like Ohio and Florida, where there was a huge difference in the exit polls. At the beginning of the night, I remember watching the news on election night, and Kerry was leading by 52% in Ohio. And then what happened? What happened? So that's one of the reasons why people are up in arms about these electronic voting machines without paper ballots, because there's no way you can verify that the vote's correct and that it hasn't been tampered with. So they're asking for paper ballots because then they have some way of verifying that it's recorded the way they intended and that they can do a recount later.
What is your preference? Among the four, which did you see as the one you could be most comfortable voting on?
You know, it was a long time ago, and it's hard to keep all the details straight in my mind, but Sequoia and ESNS are pretty much the same. I don't really have a preference. I couldn't say. But
were you able to try them out?
Oh, yeah, I tried all of them out. And they had prepared some ballots for the demo. Some were actual elections in the past, and some were made-up elections. And so you were able to go through the ballots, pushing buttons to select candidates. And any time you can back up and change a decision before you were done. And when you were all done and you were presented with your full ballot that you can review, you can go back and make changes, okay? And then you can ask for the paper ballot to print. And while that's printing, you can still back up and make changes and reprint the ballot. So it was very flexible and it was really easy to use, I thought. But I'm used to working with computers. Not all the systems are quite as easy to use as others, and I can't remember all the details right now. But the most important thing is that they all have a paper ballot. And if you looked at the paper ballot while it's printing, you would know it's like a two-dimensional barcode printed for each ballot. So that, and some of the vendors, but not all of them, provided readers. So you can scan the ballots, it would read the 2D barcode and record, you know, recount the ballots that way. So it could be done fairly quickly that way.
When I was listening to some of the things that happened in Ohio, one person testified that they started at the top and they did the presidential choice, and they had chosen Kerry at the time, and they went down and they got to the very bottom of the ballot, and it said, because you have to scroll down so you can't see the very top and the bottom at the same time. And then they said, you know, you could choose, is this your choice? And you could vote now. Well, they decided, well, I'm going to go up to the top just to see if I've covered everything. They went all the way up to the top, and where they had voted for Kerry was now flashing by the time they got to the bottom. Somehow, by voting all the way to the bottom, they had there was a default or something, so that right. The Kerry was flashing. And so he suspects that when many people press the button, they were not voting in the presidential election at all. Now,
flashing meant it was like an undervote.
Right. Flashing meant that you had not voted. As soon as you voted, it would stay the same color. Right. And initially, when he pressed the button, it did stay the same color. But by the time he got to the bottom of the ballot and then checked up at the top, the Kerry was flashing again. I mean, aren't there all kinds of ways that electronic voting machines could be changed?
I'm a programmer. I've been a programmer for over 20 years. I can tell you there's all kinds of ways. If you really wanted to hack an election and you were actually writing the code for these machines, it'd be trivial to rig it to give a few votes to one candidate or the other. And it was such a way that it'd be very hard to detect. For example, all these machines have to be certified, so they have to be tested by some third party, okay? But you can rig it so that this secret code won't be invoked unless certain conditions are met, and they would be met during the certification, for example. I mean, you may have to do a certain thing to activate it, and something that maybe the election judge would have to do on a machine to activate the special code on election day. So there's all kinds of ways to get around certification and to incorporate some secret code in the software to swing a few votes toward your candidate. That's what's so scary about, because you can't detect it. There's no paper ballot. So that's why people are so upset about these voting machines that don't have paper ballots. Because you can't tell if the votes have been recorded properly, and there's no way to check, and there's no record.
But isn't there a way to have the paper ballot say something different than what you put in the machine and then have the votes
certainly
tabulated differently?
Right. And that's certainly true. And so it doesn't make any, there's no advantage to having paper ballots unless they're actually counted. And in the best bills in pending in Congress right now also have a mandate for that at least 2% of the precincts have recounts automatically, a random sampling of precincts. They go in and count all the paper ballots and make sure they match the totals, to make sure the machines are working properly. I should mention also, like going back to Ohio and Florida and states that have electronic machines, and comparing those votes with the exit polls, okay? Wherever the discrepancy between the exit polls and the vote totals, it's always in a state where they had electronic machines, and the mistakes were always in Bush's favor. There are like almost no cases where if there was a discrepancy, it was in Kerry's favor. And so that's very suspicious, and that's why people are upset about this also. But again, paper ballots alone, or voter-verified paper ballot, isn't enough. And in my opinion, the best thing to make these elections more secure is to make sure that the election workers are honest, that they're nonpartisan, and that they're accountable, and that the system is transparent and public. And so a lot of people are also asking for open source software on these machines. So programmers like myself and programmers who develop systems like Unix can get together, examine the software, and find out how it works and make sure there's no bugs in it and that it can't be taken advantage of in any way. So there are some bills that provide for that as well. And
are any of the four demos, do any of them have open source software?
No, I asked them specifically that question, and none of the vendors provide public access to their source code, or it's not open source, it's proprietary.
Did the machines seem to be serving their purpose, which is to help people who are disabled be able to vote without assistance?
I did try one of these out. The way it works is it has an auditory feedback. You put on earphones, and as you make selections, it tells you what you're selected. And I don't know how they would see what they're selecting, though. But I know there's one that works with a dial. The Heart Civic machine works with a dial. And as you turn the dial, you can hear in the earphones who the candidates are. But then you still have to press a button to select that candidate. Also, I remember the Diebold machine also had an auditory system, but it also worked in like three different languages. And that was also another requirement, I think, of Cook County in Chicago. It had to work with English, Spanish, and Chinese, I think. And so it seemed to work. I mean, I didn't try Spanish and Chinese, but the English worked okay. Yeah, so they seemed like nice machines, but like I say, you can't really trust them.
Ted Suwinski of the Oak Park Coalition for Truth and Justice, who attended a vendor's demonstration on March 15th of the four semifinalists in the contest to win a contract to bring e-voting machines to Chicago and Cook County. Tom Leach of the Chicago Board of Elections said that although they are working closely with the Cook County Board of Elections, both boards will approve their selections separately. Although neither office could give me a timeline for the decision, Tom Leach said that the goal is to purchase at least one e-voting machine per precinct to be used in spring 2006. The next meeting of the Cook County Board of Elections is Wednesday, April 6th at 10 a.m. at 118 North Clark Street on the fifth floor. The agenda for the meeting will be available by April 1st. You can call 312-603-5656. The next meeting of the Chicago Board of Elections is April 26th. At 10 a.m. at 69 West Washington on the 8th floor. Call 312-269-7900. Two public fora on voting issues are planned for next month as well. On April 7th, a forum on voting rights and what happened in Ohio features Dr. Ron Byman, senior researcher at UIC's Institute of Government and Public Affairs and visiting assistant professor at the University of Chicago. He's author of The United States of Ukraine, with a question mark, and co-author of Who Won the Popular Vote. Also on the panel are Neil Reznikoff, local activist for People's Democracy, and Dr. Laura Chamberlain, well-known local activist with the Ballot Integrity Project and Election Protection Coalition. Then on April 30th, a public forum on elections called Your Ballot, Your Future will be held at the Dole branch of the Oak Park Public Library from 10 to 1. The video Invisible Ballots will be shown, and speakers include Cook County Clerk David Orr and Carol Kay, Chicago software developer, Dan Johnson Weinberger, attorney with the Midwest Democracy Center, and again, Professor Ron Byman. From the trenches, I'm Rita Sand.
Tuesday evening at the Lincoln Restaurant, the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, or ICER, held a prayer vigil with interfaith clergy to denounce the anti-immigrant advocacy group Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. Luvia Quinones from ICER said,
"The purpose of the prayer vigil is simply just to show a symbolic protest for the FAIR organization that they're trying to mobilize people here in Illinois to start an anti-immigrant campaign, saying that there's a lot of potential terrorists within the immigrants, which is not true. They're just hardworking people that just come here for economic reasons or for political refugee, and that's it. They don't come here to start committing crimes or anything like that. They're always even trying to pay taxes and everything." And what kind of message do you want all the people gathered here to say to the people inside the restaurant?
Simply, if you're not going to help immigrants, don't start hurting them. Don't start saying negative things about them. Don't start saying that there's terrorists, that they're here to start taking money, start taking benefits from other people. Because everybody knows, if you're here undocumented, not illegally, how people say, you can't get any benefits.
FAIR advocates immigration laws must be fairly and effectively enforced, and that immigration should not be permitted to undermine opportunities for the poor in the U.S. to improve their working conditions and wages. The Center for New Community has created a report on FAIR linking the organization to white supremacist organizations. According to the Center for New Community, FAIR was founded in 1979 by John Tanton, who was involved in a private study for an English-only law in Arizona and founder of a nationalist organization called YTAN. FAIR is now the largest anti-immigrant group in the country, who claims to have about 70,000 members. Interfaith clergy and community leaders proposed for just immigration reform and policies that would keep families together and reward hard work and parents who are trying to provide for their children.
My name is Jesse Garcia, and I'm here helping us out, and I'm with the Albany Park Neighborhood Council, which is on Montrose and Kesey, and we're here today to help to have petitions and everything for immigration, because this is really bogus about the people inside here, they don't like us because we come from another country. But look, how did America start? They weren't over here. Europeans weren't over here yet. They were when Christopher Columbus came, it was because of Spain. And look, we have mostly Hispanics here. Some people probably are from Spain and everything, and they still hate us. And I just don't like that, because we're over here working hard and everything. Look, everybody's really cold right now. Yeah, for real, look. Everybody's really cold. And my father, he came here when he was 17. He came here working hard. He started off as a dishwasher at a restaurant. And right now, he's working, he's helping out the government and everything. And look, he started off as an immigrant and everything. And right now, my dad has never committed a crime or nothing. And you see mostly people around here that are born here, and they're the worst people too. See, people that come from other places, they don't come here to start trouble. They come here to start a new life, to start a better life. Because me, right now I'm happy the way my life is right now. I have friends, I have family everywhere around here. And if they take all of the immigrants from here, I'm going to lose most of my family. And for me, that ain't really good.
Well, I'm an immigrant. I truly believe that the U.S. was not formed, out of nowhere. It was formed from the struggles of many people coming here. It was formed from the struggles of the Native Americans and the Irish, the blacks, and now, the Hispanics. And I believe that we are part of a continuing legacy as immigrants, as Filipino immigrants, and that legacy of struggle has to be lived on. And, we will win. I do believe that we will win, and we will truly show how we can build this country and build this world, make it more just, make it more humane, and make it more loving place to be in.
Okay, and also, I guess, what do you think of these people who are in the Lincoln restaurant?
I really think that it's sad that people do forget where they do come from, and that they have a very poor position, and I think the poverty of their their position, the way they see things is a manifestation of how base and how corrupt things are right now, and that has to change. And like I said a while ago, that's part of a continuing struggle, and we are part of that legacy of change and of positive change, for change for the better. You know, like Dr. King and Brother Malcolm and all the people who came before us, Cesar Chavez and Carlos Bulosan, who is my countryman. You know, I hope that we can have more triumphs as a people.
The vigil culminated with Pastor Almonte of the North Shore Baptist Church and leader with the Organization of the Northeast, saying for those gathered to take one another's hands in solidarity and to pray. The vigil turned into a rally where people gathered and continued chanting.
It's from Pakistan, and my family is from India, and I think it's very amazing to be here tonight because we come from two countries that historically have been wrought by tension, by hatred, by anger, and we're here today holding hands together in unity and peace. And we ask the people inside today at the Lincoln Restaurant to share that same spirit of peace and love that Osama and I have together tonight. We're not suicide bombers. We're not terrorists. We're not people out here to destroy families, to destroy American values. If anything, I think all the people here today embody what true American values are. So, we're all family, and once again, on that note, the people united will never be defeated.
From the trenches, I'm Tina Hernandez-Laschetti.
The immigrants united will never be defeated.
From the Trenches is produced by Chicago's Independent Media Center with help from Loyola University. You can post your own stories, listen to this program again, or find news and information from Chicago and around the world through our internet address. The address is www.chicago.indymedia.org. Many thanks to WLUW for their continued support. Listen again on the last Monday in April for another report from the Trenches.